Pieces broke off and rolled down the parts of the hillside that were still solid, splashing into the water. The young Krepp shouted in what sounded to be excitement. Dessel stopped before he destroyed anything else. He had figured out what he needed to know. He could cause this land to crumble to the water level. When the Krepps around the lake began to scream something, Dessel first thought it had to do with him. But they pointed the other way from the water, many sprinting as if in a hurry. The child Krepp no longer smiled as he raced down the rocky hillside with dangerously long leaps. Dessel realized what this must be then as he chased after the Krepps. Intruders. He looked for his fellow humans when he arrived at the western border, glad to find Lyda and Adria as he was pushing through the Krepps. "Any idea who it is?" Dessel asked loudly, to be heard above the commotion. "No," Lyda said as she took his hand. They moved through to the front, where Basin and Rila faced an army of humans. The black uniforms said they were loyal to Tenred, unless this was a trick. No, Dessel saw King Horthon walking out from the seemingly endless line of them. There had to be at least thousands behind the older king, his crown covering a large spot of baldness while the rest of his grey hair fell down behind him.
"I'm here to speak to Rikik," Horthon announced, ignoring Basin and Rila standing in front of him.
"He should be here soon," Basin said. "What do you want?"
"That is to be discussed with Rikik,"
Rila asked. "Is the rest of your army still on the mountains?"
"I didn't come here to speak to either of you, and certainly not to answer questions from a psychic about my army. I hope you can appreciate that, Rila."
The King of Tenred didn't seem surprised to see them, however. He probably knew they were here.
"But does he know we have the weapon?"
Dessel couldn't think of any other reason why fighters from Tenred would come here other than to take it. The Krepps wouldn't let that happen, not without a battle. The trees prevented Dessel from seeing just how large of an army Horthon had brought, but many must have stayed behind, or Tenred would risk losing their position on the Fjallion Mountains. Rikik and Nebri came forward out of the crowd. Nebri seemed to recognize Horthon, gesturing at him as he spoke to his father.
"Why are you here?"
Rikik asked Horthon.
"With army. You wish they die?"
Many of the Krepps stomped their feet threateningly, others thumping their chests. Dessel was glad to stand among them.
"The humans you harbor here have built a weapon that threatens my kingdom. I've come to take it. This is not a threat to your Krepps. This is a matter between humans. I do not wish to dishonor your kin by invading your sacred land with my army. But that is exactly what I will do if my enemies from Kiro do not hand over what they built here."
Nebri spoke with his father for a long time. He seemed to have finished translating, yet continued talking to Rikik, as if suggesting something. Dessel didn't know whether he should trust the Krepp, so he looked to Rila for a cue. She showed worry as she walked over to Nebri and interrupted him in Kreppen. Basin headed toward Dessel.
"Any idea what they're saying?"
he asked.
"No."
The words Dessel recognized were too few to catch any meaning that Rila's expression didn't already tell him.
"I thought the Krepps wanted to fight with us,"
Adria said.
"They do, so long as it's an honorable battle," Dessel answered.
There was no doubt that Adria's mother was arguing this, as she seemed to be speaking against Nebri. The two of them took turns talking to Rikik, while the leader of the Krepps didn't respond to either. Eventually Rila returned to face Horthon.
"How many have you brought here?"
"Enough to attack this colony whenever we please, night or day,"
he addressed Rikik.
"Do you want your Krepps to stop their work as they wait for an invasion? These people are not worth it. Tell them that they are no longer protected. They will bring the weapon to us and we will leave."
Rila told Nebri, "We said this might happen. The Krepps have always been willing to fight."
"Many are willing to fight," Nebri said, "but not many are willing to die. We've seen how powerful humans can be in the arena. These are a lot of trained humans."
"They do not equal our skill," Rila said firmly.
"And yet we have been winning this war against you,"
Horthon interrupted.
"Pick 50 of your soldiers to face 50 of ours," Rila challenged.
"No. Either bring the weapon to me or face the entire army behind me."
"They would lose if they fought," Rila told Nebri again. "And they know this. If all the Krepps face them, they will be too scared to fight."
Horton chuckled.
"Do you think an honourable and fair battle is what you can expect?"
He gestured around them.
"There are trees and hills surrounding the colony, and no walls to protect it. Fireballs and arrows will rain down from the sky. Kreps will be drawn out and slaughtered. Allow us to enter now, Rikik, and we will be gone very soon. Or don't, and your Kreps will start to lose their homes and lives."
Nebre spoke to his father for a long while again. Rila argued against him, their voices loud and argumentative. Eventually, Rikik put his palm toward Rila's face and said something to silence her. She tried to speak again, but he interrupted. Instead, he spoke to his son, who began to nod. Nebre then addressed the many Kreps, watching. Possibly 1,000 of them made up a line guarding the territory. Dezel figured they wouldn't need walls when all were willing to fight for honour. But perhaps he didn't fully understand these creatures after all. Rila was dejected as she walked over to join Basin.
"This can't be happening," he said.
"I'm as surprised as you."
"What is Nebre telling them?"
"The same thing he told his father. This is a matter between humans. By letting Tenred's army enter, nothing is taken from the Kreps, no dishonour. They could fight, but many will die because the humans do not fight honourably. They hide and shoot and use fire. Sometimes peace is the right choice." There seemed to be ambivalence as the Kreps looked to one another.
"It's not peace," Basin said to Rila. "It's capitulation. Tell them we plan to fight, not surrender. Ask them to join us."
Rila turned around to face the gathered Kreps as she spoke in their language. It was a short statement. Garrigo was the first Krep to come forward. He already had his new bastial steel sword, waving it as he shouted. But Nebre shouted louder. Rila translated for Basin and the others nearby. "We must decide for battle or peace together. If some Kreps fight, they will bring death and destruction upon our colony. I ask for peace today because there is no honour in this battle." Garrigo let down his arm. He surprised Ezel by looking right at him as if apologizing, then said something and walked back into the crowd.
"He changed his mind,"
Rila translated. "He agrees with Nebre." Basin cursed. With Garrigo turning his back on them, the rest of the Kreps would follow suit.
"It's over,"
Rila said. Basin put up his hand.
"Give me a moment."
He took a breath to think, with a bowed head, then found Stefan among the audience. He said something quietly to the chemist, then Stefan ran off. Nebre told Horton,
"The weapon will be brought to you."
"No, we're coming to get it."
"No,"
Rikik boomed.
"You do not enter."
Horton stared at him for a moment.
"Then it must be brought here within an hour."
"It will,"
Nebre said. He transitioned back to his language, and a group of Kreps followed him back into the colony.
"Basin?"
Rila asked as they followed the Kreps.
"Just let it happen,"
he said. Ezel still couldn't believe the Kreps, and especially Basin, would allow this. How could this happen after all he and the others had been through? Ezel realized they didn't have the accuracy needed with the weapon to destroy Horton's army, potentially killing Kreps instead, but shouldn't they at least try rather than give it up? No. He supposed the catapult would miss its mark, and the Kreps would throw them out of the colony for starting a battle. Or kill them. Even later, as Horton's troops started wheeling the weapon away, Dezel awaited a command from Basin that would put an end to this. Dezel couldn't think of anything that would work besides starting a battle, but the Kreps' cooperation would be needed for that. Without it, he and the Wind Knights would be killed, without much effort on the part of Tenred's soldiers. Their troops did not take the apple vines. Dezel didn't know if it was because they had some of their own, because they didn't realize they would need the plant, or because they just didn't care about it. Dezel waited with Lyda near her father as they watched the weapon disappear between the trees. Dezel was too shocked to feel betrayed, though he knew he had been by the very Krep who had helped them the most since they'd arrived.
"What will we do now?"
Lyda asked her father.
"There's only one thing we can do, and that's prevent Horthen from using what we built to destroy the Academy."
"Are you sure that's what he plans?"
Basin paused as he seemed to think it over.
"I am sure,"
Rila said as she approached. "I've spoken with him enough times to know that he would use that power to win the war as quickly as he could. The destruction of the Academy is inevitable."
"We have to act soon,"
Basin said, gesturing for someone to come to him. Stefan headed over at a jog.
"Did you manage to do what I asked?"
"Yes."
Good. Everyone listen,
he directed. Basin finally told his plan. It was short and simple, and just like many other plans of the same nature, it was extremely dangerous. It didn't take more than a few minutes for him to finish, after which he told Dessel,
Go with Rila to speak with Garrigor. We need him and his creps, or this isn't going to work.
Shouldn't you talk to him, then? Dessel asked. As leader, Basin would have a better chance convincing the creps of anything.
He likes you better, Basin said, and he respects you.
Rila added, All the creps do. This came as a surprise.
You can feel that? Dessel questioned. It doesn't matter right now, Basin said as he gestured at Garrigor. Go with Dessel, Rila.
I don't need to, she said. That's Zoke who Garrigor is speaking with. Basin squinted in that direction.
So it is. Good. Go, Dessel.
He headed toward Garrigor as he wondered why the creps respected him. Nebre had given him the impression that the creps viewed humans as dishonorable, so Nebre must have dishonored himself by helping them. But if the creps respected Dessel, did Nebre bring about his own dishonor? Zoke was the crep who Dessel had thought of recently but had yet to meet. Why hadn't Zoke shown up until now if he spoke common tongue? Perhaps he despised humans. Dessel wasn't sure how to begin as he stopped in front of the two creps. Zoke was older, about Nebre's age, it seemed. His hard skin didn't sag like Rikik's did, but its grey colour was lighter, as if faded. He was short for a crep, about the same height as Dessel, but Zoke appeared just as strong, if not stronger, than most of his fellow males. There was something in his yellow eyes that made him seem cunning, as if he already knew why Dessel was here.
"I'm Dessel Fogg," he began.
"I know," Zoke said in a deep voice. "I've seen you in the arena. I'm Zoke."
Dessel offered his hand. Zoke gave a firm and slow shake with meaning in his piercing gaze.
"We should have met long ago," Zoke said, "but I didn't know there would be a need to do so until now."
His common tongue was perfect, as if he'd spoken it his entire life. Dessel wished he knew everything there was to know about this crep, for he saw something in Zoke that seemed to be missing in Nebre. This was truly an ally.
"We need the help of honorable swordsmen," Dessel said.
"Then you've come to the right creps. Nebre is my friend, but he is also a coward. He and his father didn't want me involved with you humans, which is why I stayed away. But this is a matter I can no longer ignore."
"Why didn't they want you involved?" Dessel asked.
"They worried I would put too much value on your needs given my past of helping humans."
Garrigor patted the hilt of his bastial steel sword in his sheath and said something. Dessel didn't need a translation to understand that the crep was eager to use his new gift. Dessel got around to the important question. "How many creps can you and Garrigor convince to fight with us?" Zoke looked disappointed.
"None against that army, if you mean to chase them."
"No, there's another way."
"Will there be honor in the combat?"
Dessel shook his head. He had to be honest.
"No."
Zoke translated for Garrigor, who smiled as he grabbed Dessel's shoulder and leaned down until they were eye to eye.
"Good,"
Garrigor said in a harsh whisper.
"They humans deserve dishonor."
Chapter 35 Dessel speculated with Lyda and Adria as to how Hawthorne had discovered the weapon. They determined that he probably had captured a soldier of Kiro at some point. Adria explained that most of Kiro's army was waiting for Basin and the Wind Knights to bring peace to this war. Most knew about the potential of an explosion. Tenred must have seen or heard the blast set off a couple of days ago.
"We should have taken the extra time to transport the weapon farther before testing it."
But was there really anywhere they reasonably could have gone to hide the explosion? Ovira did not compare to the size of Greenedge. Even the elves in Meriek might have heard it. If they didn't, then a scout loyal to Fathol certainly would have, if he or she was nearby, which was likely. So Fathol probably knew as well. Lyda said the elf had not contacted her. He figured he would feel Fathol reaching for either of them in the other plane anyway. Dessel and Lyda had spent some of their precious time during their nights together in the other plane. But the more times they both visited, the less it felt as if there was anything new to discover. The plane tightened their connection, allowing Dessel to somehow understand what Lyda was feeling. It was akin to that strange and beautiful night at her parents' house in the academy, when they were recovering from their injuries with the help of Caedjulo. They'd held their hands over each other's hearts and shared their second kiss. Aldezel saw no need of heightening his senses around Lyda by pouring his focus into the other plane. His sight, sense, smell and touch were already abundantly satisfied. At nightfall, he, Lyda and Adria joined everyone who would be going on this mission. Dezel's sword was not bastial steel, but it was still sharp and deadly. Having used nothing but a dull and heavy blade for all of his training, he felt strong and able with this one. All the Wind Knights who had come to the Crepan colony joined them, even the chemist, Stefan. He carried a sword in a sheath on his belt, as did many others. Adria brought both her bow and her staff. Kernich had done the same, except he chose a sword. It didn't matter how skilled all of them were. They were 100 against thousands. Of course, Dezel was nervous. He told himself it was fine, even normal, to feel this way. He was sure the others were just as nervous, though he didn't see it. Half of them were Kreps, with bastial steel blades. Garrigor stayed at the head of the group with Basin and Zoke, the only Krep here without a bastial steel weapon. Adria and Kernich were right behind Basin, with Adria's mother and instructor to her other side. Dezel was just behind them, with Lyda a few ranks back. The battle had to be swift, or it would be lost. They ran through the forest without light. Dezel picked up his boots high with each step, though his toes still clipped rocks and roots. Eventually they met Nico, the Pyphorial mage who had scouted ahead.
"Have they made camp?"
Basin asked.
"Yes, a mile out."
"What about their scouts?
I don't think they're using any to watch the east, only the west. There's no reason for them to think we'd come for them."
Because the Kreps didn't fight when the Tenrid troops arrived at the territory, the creatures weren't likely to follow and ambush them during the night. But Hawthorne couldn't have expected citizens of Kiro to do exactly that. Probably because it's half-mad.
"What about psychics?" Basin asked Nico.
"I was too high for any to sense me."
"And the weapon?"
"They made camp with it at the center, but no one seems to be guarding it specifically."
That didn't matter. There was no way to get to it without being seen.
"You predicted right," Nico told Basin. "They're using a hillside as cover from the wind."
Dezel's panic was beginning to become a problem as they followed Nico toward Hawthorne's camp. Everything was going right so far, but that didn't change how much their ultimate success depended on him. They might all be killed if he failed. He could do nothing but obsess over those thoughts as he stumbled through the woods. Soon they arrived at the hillside overlooking the enemy camp and came to a stop at its flat apex.
"They're just ahead," Nico said.
"Dezel, are you ready?"
Basin asked.
"Almost."
Dezel heard the nervous tremor in his voice. He knew he'd given the wrong answer when Basin let out a sigh.
"Dezel, come with me,"
Kernich said.
"Where?"
"It'll just be a moment."
Kernich had his hand on Dezel's back as they walked away from their troops. When they were far enough where they wouldn't be heard, Kernich crouched down to meet Dezel's eye level. He was just a shadow, though a large one.
"You'd be an idiot not to be afraid,"
the warrior began.
"I'm glad you are. But there's a difference between being scared and fighting scared. One of the reasons I'm still alive is because I never fight scared. You can't fight smart and scared at the same time. You have to pick one."
"How?"
"You have to realize your goal at all times during combat. Are you fighting to live, or are you fighting to take back what belongs to us?"
Dezel nodded.
"I see."
Kernich straightened and slapped Dezel's back.
"You'll have no regrets if you always fight for what you believe in."
Now Dezel felt ready. They returned to the group. He realized too late that he had forgotten to thank Kernich for his advice. That would have to wait for later.
"Is there something we need to worry about?"
Basin asked Dezel.
"No,"
he answered confidently.
"Is everyone else ready?"
"Yes."
Basin apparently didn't need to ask them before answering. It was a reminder that everyone here was more experienced in combat than Dezel was.
"Everyone except the Kreps."
They fought each other, but most had never been in a battle like the one to come. That didn't seem to matter. Garrigor appeared so eager to use his new bastial steel weapon that his hands were twitching as they clasped its handle. He leaned toward Dezel.
"Yektik."
"Yektik,"
Dezel repeated.
"Fight hard."
Basin tossed the shield to Dezel. He caught it and strapped it around his hand and wrist, then met Lyda's gaze. They gave each other a nod before he turned around to lead the charge. He ran toward the edge of the hilltop. The camp appeared below him in sections as Dezzel approached. The first line of tents and campfires he saw had no obvious order to them. Those troops would be too far, hopefully, to join the fight. The next thing he saw was more tents and fewer campfires. Dezzel came closer to the edge. He didn't slow, even as a wave of fear threatened to halt him. From here he could make out a dense mass of hundreds of enemies who surrounded the weapon. Mages had removed the bastial energy from the towers of Akaril, making the whole thing impossible to discern from this distance. But it had to be there, because nothing else was as large in the camp.
"My goal," Dezzel reminded himself, "fight to get there, not to stay alive."
More and more enemies appeared below as he neared the edge. They probably slept all the way up to the hillside. He could hear his comrades running behind him. He glanced back for a glorious look at Basin, Rila, and Kernich following in his footsteps. Adria, Lyda, and Beatrix were close behind, with the 50 Kreps and the rest of the Wind Knights. They were the most capable people Dezzel had met. They would not fall here. He just needed to get them to the weapon safely. When Dezzel leaped off the top of the hillside, the wind took him with a howl and threw him forward. He felt like he was flying for a breath, but soon all of his momentum shifted as gravity took hold. Not a single enemy noticed him until it was too late for them. He made the ground soft, yet added a bounce to it. He landed hard, pain shooting through his knees. Had the drop been any higher, he might have injured himself. But he felt strong again as he leapt off the ground. He wanted to laugh with glee as the few soldiers awake who saw him were too surprised to shout out anything but curses. As Dezzel soared over them, he heard his 99 allies bouncing off the ground right behind him. Dezzel shifted his focus from that patch of land to all the dirt directly below him, where his enemies stood, too stunned to even go for their weapons. Dezzel liquefied the dirt, and Tenrid's troops sank into it up to their necks. He was quick to make it hard again to give himself and his comrades a place to land. The fun was over as Dezzel came down first, among the sea of heads and shoulders. The troops were already freeing their hands and clawing toward more solid ground. Dezzel noticed an archer ahead and put up his shield as the arrow was shot. A sharp pain travelled down his arm as the arrow struck his shield. He kept it in front of his face and chest as he sprinted forward. He let the ground remain hard beneath his boots, but he softened it to the state of liquid in patches ahead. Another arrow slammed into his shield. He risked a look around it as he heard his enemies yelling in surprise. Men fell into the sand as they ran for their swords. Archers lost their bows and quivers as they sank down to their waists. A falling mage tried to cast at Dezzel but shot his fireball wildly into the ground. It hit the back of the head of a man trying to free himself from the sand. He didn't scream, limp after the smoke cleared. Dezzel checked on his comrades behind him. They fought the few soldiers who'd emerged from the sand or came from the sides. Nothing seemed to hinder his allies' progress as Adria and Kernich's weapons hit their marks. Lyda's fireballs blasted away a mage lifting his wand, and the psychics pained anyone who was close. Dezzel caught sight of Vithos between Beatrix and Rila. The elf threw his hands forward, and Dezzel heard enemies screaming everywhere. There was a flash of light in front of Dezzel. He put up his shield reflexively as a fireball hit. He was struck by immense heat and pain, losing track of where he was. His hands were free of the shield, shaking, but he was still moving forward somehow, stumbling. Kernich seemed to be half-carrying him.
"Keep going!" screamed the warrior.
Dezzel found his footing now, with Kernich to one side and Garrigor to the other. They closed in on the weapon while their enemies closed in on them. It was too chaotic for Dezzel to keep track of everything. He focused instead on the five nearest swordsmen charging him and his comrades. He remembered past advice from Adria to watch for a thrust. It was the most common way Tenrid's soldiers liked to initiate combat. Dezzel no longer had the shield. He couldn't dodge without risking bumping into Kernich or Garrigor. With aggression making Dezzel feel invincible, he almost decided to take the blade, but he quickly discarded that idea as foolish, only to hone in on another. "I must kill them and get to the weapon." He could read his enemies through their energy in the other plane. They had no fear, only aggression like his. So Dezzel watched their hands closely. Two thrusts were imminent. Dezzel leapt and was surprised to find Kernich and Garrigor in the air with him. As if having coordinated their attack, they batted threatening swords out of the way and shouldered their shocked enemies. Dezzel stepped onto a still-moving Tenrid uniform in the way of his feet and was about to slash his blade through the next line of swordsmen when they screamed out in pain and dropped to the ground. Dazzle saved his attack for the third row as he thrust his blade into an opponent's shoulder before the enemy could attack. Dazzle had to stop for a moment to take his blade out of the quivering flesh, kicking his opponent off his sword. The man screamed as if angry, not in pain, and tried to grab Dazzle. Where had this soldier's sword gone? It didn't matter. Gregor bashed the man's head with his own, knocking him unconscious. The Krep then took down three men with two quick movements, a wide swipe of his sword and a kick of his clawed foot. Dazzle pushed forward, meeting eyes with another swordsman directly in his path, but this man's gaze lifted above Dazzle. Zoke seemingly came from the sky, landing on the enemy, only to ignore him. The Krep immediately engaged the two swordsmen in front of him, blocking one man's blade with his own sword and grabbing the attacking arm of another. Dazzle thought to help with the man on the ground, but a glance down revealed that Zoke had used his foot to pin this enemy's sword. Dazzle pushed on. He had to be one of the first to reach the catapult. It was close. He couldn't believe the skill of his comrades as they protected him. They cut through Tenred's soldiers as if these men had never lifted a sword before. Dazzle was barely able to claim two kills before they made it to the weapon, but making it here was the easy part compared to what was next. He softened the ground for the catapult to sink about 5 yards deep. That allowed Dazzle to reach the first square of acryl metal on one side of the weapon. Stefan had poured some substance on it to weaken the glue that held it to the wooden wall of the catapult. It was supposed to have worked by now, but Dazzle couldn't pry it off as he kept hold of his sword with his left hand.
"Gregor!" screamed Gregor as he pushed Dazzle out of the way and ripped the acryl off with one hand.
The rest of the squares of metal above it came down with a crash. One war done. Konich dropped his sword to grab the bottom square of acryl on the other side. With a scream he ripped it off. The metal above it toppled too. Dazzle cleared a path for Lyder and a small team to get the acryl into sacks. They were effectively surrounded. Their mages and archers couldn't do much in close combat, but that didn't matter because the enemy's mages and marchers couldn't shoot and cast either. Dazzle wasn't accomplishing anything standing there watching Lyder with pride, so he moved through to join his other allies in combat. He found himself fighting beside Adria's instructor, Abith. The older man moved quickly, even with an arrow sticking out of his leg, but Stefan, on Dazzle's other side, could do little more than slowly defend himself from a single attacker, his movements hampered by a shaft buried in his left side. Dazzle stabbed his sword through the armor and into the stomach of Stefan's opponent. The man's eyes bulged as he fell backward, nearly taking Dazzle's sword with him. Dazzle was pulled out of the line to keep hold of it. He continued to forget that sticking his sword into someone meant he had to pull it out with a fair amount of strength. There had been no practice of this beforehand. Someone should have told him to be prepared. He saw his death was imminent as two blades came for him from opposite sides. He could only get his sword out to block one of them. As he did so, he braced himself to feel the other blade slice into his shoulder. But when the pain didn't come, he looked over to find the swordsman falling to his knees, blood spilling out of his mouth. Gregor was behind him, pulling the bastial steel blade out of the man's back. The Krep spun with a powerful swing, slicing through the chests of two others. Zoke came through to protect Garigor's vulnerable side as the Krep took on three humans and knocked them backward. Their grievous wounds would soon render them lifeless. Adria came up on Dazzle's side, slamming her staff down onto a man's head. There was a sickening crack as he fell. Konich was behind Adria, fending off two attackers. Dazzle weaved through to help, stabbing one of them in the arm and causing the man's sword to drop.
"We almost got it all," Lyder yelled.
Dazzle had to leave his nearby comrades and head back toward the half-buried catapult. There was little space between one side of their makeshift circle and the other, and soon he was at the center.
"Basin Hiller!" shouted Horton from somewhere nearby. "If you order your troops to lay down their weapons, you all will live."
"Because we're more valuable to him as prisoners anyway."
Ignoring the king, Basin yelled for Nico while dragging a bulging sack behind him.
"They have the acryl!"
a few enemies were shouting.
"This is your last chance, Hiller!" Horthen yelled.
"I'm here!"
a voice said from the dark sky above. Basin gave a look at the hundreds of Tenred troops between his allies and the hillside where they'd come down. Then he glanced around in other directions, no doubt determining their chance of survival. It seemed low to Dazzle.
"Now, Nico!" Basin shouted.
Dazzle looked up expectantly, but he only saw the cluster of apple too late as it struck him in the head.
"Ow!"
he said reflexively as he fell backward. He quickly scrambled to his feet in time to see Lyder and Basin hunched over the black vines, woven together. Two hovering balls of bastial energy bathed the scene in white. Other mages soon joined them, summoning their own concentrated spheres of floating energy. The apple went from no glow to painfully bright in a blink. Dazzle quickly reached out to grab hold with his mind, suffocating the volatile energy as it tried to burst. It faded to a green glow as Nico came down and snatched it up. The Pyphorial mage flew into the air with it higher and higher, until Dazzle yelled, "No more!" Nico lowered his altitude as he flew east to put himself above enemy soldiers.
"Listen, all of you!"
Basin shouted with a commanding voice. Dazzle poured his focus into maintaining the volatile energy of the apple vine, but he was still able to hear the sounds of battle.
"Our Pyphorial mage has an apple cluster that will explode when dropped," Basin continued. "You will cease fighting now, or hundreds of you will die."
The Wind Knights knew this as their cue to fight defensively from then on. They guarded themselves, but they did not attack. Zoke gave the same order to the Kreps. Dazzle couldn't take his eyes off the glowing Pyphorial mage in the sky to see anything else, but he did sense the slowing movement around him.
"You heard the explosion we made once already," Basin continued. "You know we are capable of making another. This is your last chance, Horson. Order them to make way, or I'll tell Nico to drop it."
Many of the Wind Knights were demanding that the enemies in front of them lay down their weapons or they would be killed. Dazzle heard Kernich give his own warning.
"If I see any archers or mages aiming at us, they're getting an arrow between the eyes." "Keep fighting," Horton yelled. "They are not to be let out of here."
Many of his soldiers voiced complaints, especially those directly below Nico.
"No, don't. I see him right there."
One of them bellowed that something really was glowing. Others cursed their king, some adding that he wasn't the one at risk below the mage.
"Anyone who goes against me will be hung for treason," Hothin screamed. "Kill them! Kill them all!"
His voice rose until he sounded as if anger had taken over reason. But his words unfortunately began to work. Dazzle could hear the sounds of combat starting up again, clangs of metal and screams of both effort and pain.
"Damn it," Basin cursed. "Drop it, Nico. Make Horton regret this."
As Nico released the apple, so did Dazzle. It became unstable, its power growing as it burned brightly. It gave off enough light for Dazzle to see many of the terrified faces directly beneath it. Dazzle turned away as it struck. There was a crack, then a boom. A burst of heat flew over Dazzle's head, flattening him as bodies were flung into him from the force. These men and women were still alive, he realized, and they were his comrades. He started helping them up. All seemed able to stand, at least.
"Follow me,"
Payson ordered, somehow already at the front. Dazzle took out his sword again as he advanced with the others. A smoke cloud sat low over the ground in front of them. It slowly rose, revealing hundreds of charred bodies, some with glimmering pieces of bastial steel embedded in them.
"Stop them!" Hothan yelled in fury. "And shoot down that mage in the air! Fight! Whoever I see disobeying me will be hung!"
Nico flew down as a few arrows disappeared into the dark sky around him. He landed behind Basin near Lyder and Adria. Dazzle caught up to them as they ran over hundreds of men who were dead because of Hawthorne's poor decision. They kept going over more and more bodies as Dazzle expected enemy troops to engage them through the smoke, but even with Hawthorne continuing to scream at his men to fight, no one seemed to be coming after Dazzle's allies. The small number of troops who had been standing between the Wind Knights and the explosion had been knocked down. None of them had chosen to get back up, if they were even capable. Dazzle saw only one of their faces as he ran. There was no mistaking the anger in the man's eyes as he shot a look in Hawthorne's direction. The swordsman threw up his hands when he noticed Dazzle looking and dropped his blade. Dazzle didn't know specifically who had the Ackerel, as he saw only Basin carrying a sack, but he didn't worry. He knew Basin and Rila would make sure they had all of it before leaving. The crater created by the explosion was shallow and short, though there were many bodies scattered around the outskirts. Someone on the other side of it began screaming at Hawthorne, "You just got them all killed!"
"Who said that?"
the king demanded.
"5 crowns to the person who tells me his name."
A line of timid soldiers appeared through the smoke behind Dazzle. They jogged in a half-hearted attempt to pursue the Wind Knights and Kreps. Dazzle turned toward the front to see other enemies actively getting out of the way, some feigning attacks while mostly just holding up their weapons in defense. Soon all of Tenred's soldiers were behind Dazzle's allies as they headed for the trees in front of them.
"Chase after them!" Horthen was yelling. "Take back the Ackerel!"
But Dazzle was close enough to the back to see that the soldiers knew they would die if they obeyed their king. Those who did get close were taken down with Psyche. An allied mage Dazzle didn't know shot a warning fireball against a tree that stopped a group from Tenred as they protected their faces. Soon there were no other pursuers, but everyone on his side continued to run. A few, including Stefan and Abith, still had arrows sticking out of their bodies. Dazzle watched as Stefan drank a potion as he hobbled, then gave one to Abith. More potions were passed around to the injured, who all managed to keep up with the support of their comrades. Dazzle came to Stefan's side to offer his help, only to find that Zoke had gotten there first.
"Never thought we would be fighting together again," Stefan told the Krep with a groan.
"I knew as soon as you came to the colony," Zoke replied.
Basin was soon jogging near them, investigating Stefan's injury.
"How bad is it?"
Basin asked.
"Bad enough to keep me from fighting the next fight. Not bad enough to kill me."
Did the chemist know something Dazzle didn't?
"What's the next fight?"
he asked. The extent of their plan as he knew it was getting the Ackerel away from Horthen.
"We don't know yet,"
Basin answered.
"What are we doing with the Ackerel, then?"
Dazzle asked.
Rila answered from behind him.
"Destroying it? If we can," Stefan added. "I still don't know if it can be destroyed."
"There must be another way," Dazzle said.
He felt as though part of him would be destroyed, along with the Ackerel, after everything he had done to acquire and protect it.
"Horthen will get to it eventually if we don't destroy it,"
Basin reasoned.
"It's clear that the rest of the Kreps won't protect us, and there's nowhere else I know of where we can bring it and have it stay safe. Fatal must know we still have it, and so do both kings. I see no other option but to destroy it."
Dazzle still couldn't believe that was the case.
"How long would it take to build another catapult?"
he asked.
"At least a day, probably more,"
Basin said.
"We should have had the catapult positioned better to defend the colony, but I didn't expect the Kreps to let anyone enter."
They fell silent as they ran. Dazzle's mind worked quickly as he thought through their options. There was more than one, he finally realized. Of course Basin wouldn't have thought of it. Only Dazzle could have.
"I have an idea," he announced.
"About what?"
Basin asked.
"How to stop this war." "I've thought this through from all possible aspects," Basin argued. "Unless there's something you can do that I don't know about, then that's exactly what it is. But I'll need a lot of help. Can you make a portal somewhere into the Fjallion pathway?"
"Yes."
Dazzle was surprised that Basin didn't ask for details before answering.
Perhaps he trusts me more than I thought.
Or perhaps Basin was just that desperate to do something besides destroy the Ackerel. Stefan said,
"Even though you have the ability to make a portal for whatever Dazzle is scheming, none of the Ackerel is charged. We'll lose it to our enemies before it has gathered enough energy for a portal."
"I shall be able to make a portal without it, with my daughter's help," Basin countered. "But Dazzle, the portal will be small and I won't be able to keep it open for long."
"Will that still work?"
"That depends.
How many people will be able to get through it before it closes?"
"Not many."
Basin paused and checked behind them for pursuers.
"Perhaps five. But I might be able to open a second portal, after Lyda and I rest."
"Good. I should go alone the first time, then. It's too dangerous for anyone else to risk their lives."
"Let me decide that," Basin said. "What are you planning to do?"
Chapter 36 Dazzle told his idea to Basin on the way back. By the time they arrived at the arena, all of the Wind Knights and the Kreps with them knew of the plan. None of the Kreps who'd remained at the colony seemed surprised that everyone returned alive, although some were wounded. They already had taken Kerjilo, but might not recover in time to join the next battle. That should be fine so long as everything went according to plan. Many Kreps had stayed awake during the night to wait along the western border of their territory. That was where Dazzle's group had separated. Karigor, Zoke, and the other Kreps who'd gone to battle stayed with their fellow creatures, most likely to tell them what had happened. Dazzle didn't know what the Kreps thought of Nico dropping the apple plant to create an explosion. It was important to find out if the Wind Knights still had the loyalty of these very skilled fighters after doing something the Kreps might consider dishonorable. But Dazzle trusted Rila to see to that. Adria, Beatrix, and Kernich joined Dessel, Basin, and Lyda at the arena. They wanted to see Dessel off. He figured he would reunite with them later. But his plan had to work for that to happen. He began saying his farewells, just in case.
"Goodbye, Kernich. Thank you for all your help and your instruction. I wouldn't have—"
"No goodbyes," Kernich interrupted. "You will see me tomorrow."
"And me," Beatrix added. "No goodbyes."
"We should begin," Basin said. "Horton's army could arrive any second."
"One moment, father." Lyda leaned into Dessel as he hugged her close. "Be as careful as you can," she whispered.
"I will." "I'm ready when you are, Lyda."
Basin had his hands up, his palms outward. She mirrored him, and everyone else stepped away. Two clusters of bastial energy gathered in front of father and daughter. They slowly came together, doubling in size.
"We need more," Basin said. "I can't open it."
"I'll hold the energy," Lyda told him. With each of Basin's deep breaths, the glowing ball grew larger.
"Are you sure you have it?"
he asked his daughter. Her face showed a great strain. "For a little while longer." Basin drew in a heavy breath, then blew the air out as he bent his fingers. The bastial energy, so white it seemed to reflect the people watching, enlarged to the size of a fist. The heat was too intense, causing Basin and Lyda to step back.
"Still got it?"
Basin asked. The large cluster of energy shook rapidly.
"It's slipping,"
Lyda replied, panic creeping into her voice. Dessel wanted to help, but if he tried to grab the energy with his mind, it might make matters worse. Pressuring it at the wrong angle could make Lyda lose hold, and it wasn't as if he could feel how she was holding the energy in order to provide support where she needed it. All he could tell was that the energy was trying to break free, as it always did, but there was so much of it.
"Just a moment longer,"
Basin said as his hands twisted. He made a prying motion as he let out a grunt. A portal opened out of the energy, black, swallowing white. To Dessel's dismay, it stopped growing almost immediately after it began.
"That's as big as I can get it,"
Basin said. A black hole floated before them, its edges rippled as streaks of white light ran across it. Dessel wasn't sure he could fit, for the diameter was barely equal to the width of his shoulders.
"Hurry, Dessel,"
Basin urged. He swallowed his fear and dove into the hole. He felt all sorts of sensations, but mostly a strong tug from his legs down to his feet. There was nothing but air beneath him. Where was the ground? Everything seemed to be spinning. All he could do to brace himself was put out his hands and feet. His boot caught something first, yet skidded across. His hands struck rock as he seemed to be coming down flat. His left knee hit the ground painfully as he tried to catch himself. When the spinning slowed to a stop, Dessel sat up and looked. His pants had split open at his knee to reveal a superficial wound with a bit of blood. He was lucky it wasn't worse. He got up and checked his compass. He knew Basin had sent him toward the middle of the Fialion pathway, so Tenred's troops should be on the surface of the mountain toward Kiro's side, south of here, where they would be overlooking the academy and Kiro's cities. The enemy wouldn't have attacked before their king and the troops who had gone to the Crepan colony returned.
"They won't attack at all, after I'm done."
After a long walk through the twisted pathway, Dessel started to climb up one side of the wall. Even though he could soften the stone and was a capable climber, he still had to be incredibly careful along each step of the way. Much of the pathway curved inward and then outward as the walls rose, making it a more difficult climb closer to the top where death awaited if he fell. He'd always had the most trouble climbing on smooth surfaces as well as mountainsides that curved outward. To meet both challenges at once, especially with the night offering little light, Dessel was forced to pause many times and look around for the best route. He made his own light at risk of being seen. Fortunately, none of Tenred's troops seemed to be watching the pathway north of them. There was no way anyone from Kiro would come this way, for they would have to go around the entire mountain to do so. Dessel's knee stopped stinging toward the end of his climb as his heart raced. After a long while feeling he might fall, he finally got his arms over the top of the summit. It was even more difficult to pull himself up from this angle than it was to climb up to this point. He didn't feel tired, though he knew he had to be exhausted. He could tell by the sudden losses of strength during the climb. This would all be wasted if his mind wasn't strong enough to do what it needed to do up here. The mountaintop was smooth, allowing him to see quite far. It didn't feel as though much time had passed since he'd been here last, when he'd walked across the mountaintop from the other direction to search for Adria. Miklin had attacked him, chasing him all the way down the mountainside and into the water. Miklin was probably at the academy now, with most of Kiro's troops. It was the very place the mage had been exiled from many years ago, after he'd gone to the capital looking for a thief to execute. Basin had sent him to the king for punishment, only none was given. Now the headmaster was gone from the academy, and Miklin had returned. He and the rest of Kiro's army prepared each day for an attack, no doubt. Dezel wondered how many of them thought about him, Basin, and the weapon they had been working so hard to obtain. Dezel was sure that the retrieved Akeril would be on the minds of nearly all the surviving Tenred troops who'd gone to the Crepan colony. They'd witnessed the deaths of their comrades and friends. They would return to the rest of their army and speak about what had happened. Hopefully, this would turn them against their king rather than make them see Basin Hiller as their enemy. If Dezel had been part of that army, it would have turned him against Hawthorne. But Dezel had realized during this long and arduous adventure that he was different than most people. He couldn't predict the actions of others based on what he would do. It didn't take long for him to spot Tenred's army as he walked across the mountaintop. It was an impressive force of thousands, but there were many people standing in groups at seemingly random spots, clearly not worried about an ambush. Dazzle was certain that a few others were in fact watching the academy, but he couldn't see the western edge from here, where they probably stood. He walked over toward their army, shrouded by night. They wouldn't be able to tell that he didn't wear the same uniform unless he got close. Unfortunately, he would have to for this to work. His heart trilled whenever people looked his way, but he made sure not to freeze or turn around suddenly, as was his instinct, or it would be obvious he didn't belong. He wondered if he would ever be as brave as Kurnitch, fear nearly stopping Dezel every step of the way. But an interesting thing happened as he came closer and heard the subtle speaking voices of the people he was about to threaten. He stopped feeling scared. He stopped feeling anything for himself, in fact. All he worried about was the people before him, and all of those who would be affected by this action tonight. Surprisingly, he grew sad. He hated that he had to do this to save lives. Anger followed, directed toward Hawthorne. The king greedily wanted Kiro. He wouldn't give up the Akeril, even though his troops were certain to be killed. He'd shown no remorse or empathy, only rage that his troops had disobeyed him after their brethren had been slaughtered. Fueled by this anger, Dezel's breaths were heavy. Each one came out as a cloud of white that quickly dissipated when he extended his arms and reached out with his mind. He took hold of the mountain. Most of Tenred's troops were on one side of the Fialion pathway, with Dezel on the other. More than a few were on the same side as he was, although they remained close to the crevice that split the mountain. Dezel ran his mind along both sides of the crevice until he had a good feel as to what he would need to do. He penetrated the mountain deeper and deeper, as low as he could reach. Then he began. He felt nothing at first, so he strained harder to bend the mountain to his will. It didn't take long for him to realize that he would have to put his full force into this for anything to happen, which was unfortunate. The more power he used, the less control he had over it. Finally, he felt the ground beneath him begin to shake. Everyone went still on the other side of the pathway. Dezel continued to shift the stone. He didn't just feel the mountain shake, he saw it move. A portion of the mountaintop across the pathway dipped into itself. The rock around the shallow crater cracked and sprung everyone into action. Many of them ran into their tents, while more of them shouted about a quake. All soldiers were evacuating their tents with belongings when another section of the mountaintop sank into itself. Dezel feared what might happen to those nearby, but he didn't have it in him to start this up again if he were to stop completely. He tried to ease his manipulation of the stone instead, but it was difficult enough to keep his mind attached to this much rock. He couldn't break his focus to do anything but continue, as Tenred soldiers started running north. It was miles to the other side, where they would have a long and unsafe trek down the mountain, but they ran anyway because they didn't realize this wasn't a quake. This was the power of one mage. Dezel would have relished his mastery if he wasn't so scared of killing someone. The cracks were too loud and frequent for him to tell where they were coming from as the mountain on both sides of the pathway slowly started to crumble. Dezel knew he should move farther from the edge, but he would lose his focus. A chunk broke off to his right and fell into the pathway until it hit the other side, then skidded down until it was stuck. A massive crack almost distracted Dezel as it ran behind him, while slabs of stone sunk into the mountain as if a hole had opened at its heart. It was a good thing the Fjallions no longer lived here, or many would be killed as their old home collapsed in on itself. Every piece of the mountain started moving on its own, and Ezel realized his work here was done. He ended his manipulation as he tried to figure out where he could go. Both sides of the mountaintop cracked and crumbled, while large pieces continued to fall into the chasm with deafening crashes. He needed to go north, he reminded himself, with everyone else, but the mountainside was falling apart everywhere in front of him. He jumped over a widening crack, landing on loose ground that started to shift beneath his feet. He jumped off as it broke and fell. The once long and solid mountaintop was fractured up to 50 yards ahead of him. He had to be quick as he ran, the stone crumbling almost beneath his feet. Dust rose up as boulders crashed down with a terrible sound. But it didn't take long for Dessel to reach the end of the destruction. There was a section here where the mountaintop ran across the crevice like a bridge, allowing the few Tenrid soldiers on Dessel's side to run onto the other and join their comrades. Many stopped there, thinking the quake was over.
"It was no quake," Dessel announced, then lifted his arms to begin again.
The mountain started to shake as he told them,
"I will take down this entire mountain piece by piece until your army is removed."
He heard the word Mylan in the air. A single archer aimed an arrow at him, but the cracking ground beneath the man's feet drew his attention as he let his bow and arrow drop to run. The mountaintop began crumbling as they fled, Dessel keeping up with them on the other side. They did not stop this time, even when the cracking was far behind them. Nevertheless, Dessel still followed. He would stay close enough to ensure they left. It was the only way the Wind Knights would be able to set up the final part of the plan. The morning sun had begun to rise when the last of Tenred's troops started down the steep northern path from the mountaintop. Dessel lay on his back, sweating and panting. It had been a long night. He closed his eyes. There was nothing to do now but wait. The last thing he felt before falling asleep was a wave of fear that something would soon go horribly wrong. Chapter 37 Dessel awoke in a panic as he felt a portal open somewhere nearby. He checked north, down the long slope that led into Tenred territory. Now that it was daylight, he could see that an army had gathered. They weren't quite at the base of the mountain, but they were close enough to be a threat. Dessel had the sense that many portals had opened during his slumber. It appeared to be past noon. He had been asleep for hours. He still wasn't awake enough to connect these facts. He wanted to investigate the pathway south of here, where he felt the most recent portal. Basin had probably sent a group into the middle of the pathway to make their way north, up the slope, and eventually to Dessel. They would help him guard the mountain. Dessel couldn't leave his post. He had to be ready to scare Tenred's army off the mountain if they approached, so he sat and waited and tried not to think about his thirst and hunger. He hadn't been able to bring anything. The climb was difficult enough without a bag on his back. After an hour, he really wished he had a spyglass as he watched a tiny group emerge out of the end of the Fjallion pathway. They were too small from up here to recognize. They made their way over to the Tenred army. Dessel lost them among the others. After a while, a single person left the cluster of tents and soldiers and started up the slope toward Dessel. He was recognizable about halfway up, his size giving him away. Dessel carefully made his way down to meet Kurnich, taking one of the two large bags off the warrior's shoulder to help.
"I hope you manage the rest," Kurnich said, "because we have a lot to do."
"It feels like we always have a lot to do."
"But not much longer, Dessel," Kurnich chuckled. "I saw what you did to the other side of the mountain. That was all you?"
"It was." Dessel hadn't yet seen in the light the destruction he'd caused. He didn't look forward to it.
"You haven't gone back yet, have you?"
Kurnich asked. "I was waiting for the next step. Is Tenrid's army under control?"
"For now. A group of them showed up at the colony not long after you left. We thought they had come for the Akoral, but they were defecting."
"How many?" Dessel asked.
"A few hundred. They'll help us convince others that their king is not fit to lead both territories."
When Basin had first set out to figure out how to create the same explosions the Marrows were making in Caenwen, he'd planned to use this power to threaten both kings into agreeing to peace, but the war had begun before Basin finished his mission. Now the goal had changed. The fighting forces on both sides needed an avenue to end this war peacefully, for they were the ones who ultimately had control. They just had to be unanimous.
"Half of Tenred's defectors went with Rila's group to the academy," Kurnich continued. The other half came with us. Beatrix is down there right now speaking to Halton's commanders. This is going to work.
Are you saying the Ackerel won't be necessary?
No, it definitely will be. Both kings have too much power for a conversation to change everything. They still must be threatened. When I say this is going to work, I mean we will get both armies up here. But there will still be many among them who wish to fight. Rewards have been promised to officers and other commanders. They will issue the same aggressive orders as the kings unless the kings themselves give up. The Ackerel is the only way for that to happen.
Desol felt another portal open south of here in the pathway. He knew who it must be. Soon he and Kernich finished walking to the mountaintop, where Kernich took off his bag and motioned for Desol to do the same.
"You must be starving," the warrior said. "I brought bread and jerky."
"Thank you." Desol's mouth was watering before he had a chance to look in his bag. He found the cold water pouch first and nearly finished it before stopping himself.
"Go ahead," Kernich said with a smile. "There are five more in my bag."
Kernich seemed relaxed as they ate while they walked south, overlooking the crevice that split the mountain, but every muscle in Desol's body was tense. His jaws ached as he ate, as if he'd clenched his teeth during his sleep. The kings were not going to let this happen without making some attempt at stopping it. Laysen might have to cause an explosion after all. It was Desil's idea to set up the Ackerel in this new fashion, sticking it to the walls of the Fialion pathway with the same substance they'd used to attach it to the catapult. To make the explosion, all they would have to do was drop the cluster of apple vines down from the mountaintop. It had the power to kill everyone who would be on the mountain, both armies, both kings, and the Wind Knights. The mountains themselves would be obliterated, except for remnants near the northern and southern edges, though they too might crumble. But that's only if the apple actually hit the ground. Laysen would be below the falling apple, ready to make a portal to either Kiro's castle or Tenred's. If he managed to catch the apple in his portal, theory suggested that the explosion would only occur wherever Basin sent the vines, but no one knew for certain, not even Stefan. Except for Desil's mother, everyone he cared for could be killed if they did indeed destroy the mountain accidentally. Whether they dropped the apple depended on the kings. The Wind Knights expected Alaphon to agree to peace. Beatrix especially believed this. He was losing the war. Why continue? It was Horthon who had shown how little he valued the lives of his troops. Hopefully, he valued his castle more. Desil saw firsthand what he'd done to this mountain when he went south far enough. There was little evidence of the pathway any more. What used to be a smooth mountaintop was now an enormous pile of broken boulders piled on top of each other. They filled most of the pathway, which no longer split the mountain here. Desil couldn't see below, but he was nearly certain that there was no way through now. He would have to clear a path, otherwise Kiro's army would have to go around the mountain from the academy to get on top. This would put them at too much risk of being ambushed by Tenred. They had to be able to get to the mountaintop safely, or they wouldn't at all.
"The damage had to be done," Kernich told Desil. "Our plan wouldn't be possible with Tenred's army still up here."
"The mountains will never look the same."
"No, they won't," Kernich agreed. "They will always be a reminder of the destruction that war causes. That's not something to regret. It had to be done," he repeated. "It had to."
Desil had a terrible chill as he thought that he would be remembered as the mage who'd done this. He clenched his fists. That would not be his only legacy.
"I'm ready to find Basin," he told Kernich.
"Good."
The headmaster should be in the pathway toward the middle, where it was safe. Desil had made sure not to destroy any of the mountain around the portal location, for it was the one place Basin could make a portal, the one place they could threaten to drop the apple. It didn't take long for Desil and Kernich to find him, especially with Kernich yelling his name.
"Down here,"
Basin eventually replied. They looked over the edge to see Basin, Lyda, Adria, and a large group of creps filling the small width of the pathway. Desil thought he recognized Garrigor's black cloak, but it was a long way down. Impossible to tell for sure.
"The Ackerel is ready," Basin shouted up to them. "Then we're coming down," Desil hollered back.
Kernich visibly shuddered as they took a step back from the edge.
"I know I said I would climb down with you, but I changed my mind."
This was the first time Desil had seen Kernich afraid of anything. Funny how the potential of a high drop could make even the most courageous warrior timid.
"It will be easy with your strength," Desil assured him. "You just have to hold on, and I will do the rest."
Fine,
Koenig agreed. Surprised, Dezel said, That was easy.
Just hurry up before I change my mind. I don't like high places.
And why did you volunteer to be the one to bring the food and water? You knew you would have to climb down with me.
Because it would also mean that I was defending the mountain.